Hey everybody, welcome back to another Tuesday Tips brought to you by Hunt Lift Eat Podcast. I'm Carter and I'm here with my phenomenal co-host this week, Evan Eisner. What's up, dude?
What's up, man? It's good to be here. It feels weird, just me and you. Normally, we either have Perry or Luke or one of the other degenerates on here tagging along.
It's nice to have some time to ourselves, you know?
I know it is. We don't get these romantic nights very often.
Right, dude. This is also probably the first episode I've ever done without a hat on. I feel like a total bum right now.
That's, dude, it's, I don't know what it is. Like, I was literally just meal prepping, and then when I realized we're doing a podcast, I went and grabbed my hat off the couch. It's like I don't
I
know
do
how
the
to,
same thing.
like, wearing headphones without a hat on
Yeah.
feels insanely bizarre to me.
It's like a uniform, man.
It is.
All right, cool. Let's jump into it.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
Two weeks ago, our podcast came out, our episode came out about land management and what you and Perry have been doing at y'all's farm. Or plans, actually, plans to do what you guys have been doing since then, which is pretty cool. And then you guys got to do some pretty cool stuff this past week on a scale that was pretty impressive, man. So we're going to talk about prescribed burns, and we touched on it last episode that we did together. But now that y'all have some real recent firsthand experience and memory about it, man, I'd like to jump into it a little more and talk about maybe some of the benefits and why prescribed burns should be considered for wildlife habitat. And also, y'all's farm is it's an agricultural working farm as well. So from an ag point of view too, it's good as well, man. So why don't we start from the beginning there and jump into why y'all chose to go that route.
Yeah, for sure. So this might be a little unconventional tips episode just because it's not going to be like going around the horn with, a bunch of people with one, 30-second tip, kind of diving into the specifics of prescribed fire. So as you mentioned, well, I think it was Perry's tip a few weeks ago. He brought up prescribed fire. Unfortunately, Perry wasn't able to join me this past weekend when I ended up doing it. We've been trying to do it for about a month now, and the weather just hasn't cooperated. Obviously, when doing any sort of controlled burn, you have to have the weather in your favor. Not to mention, you have to check your local regulations. There might be burn bans, there might be burn restrictions. Like for us, up in the mountains of Virginia, there's a burn ban before 4 p.m. So the only time you can burn is 4 p.m. to midnight. You have to stay with it the entire time, and it has to be out by midnight. So another little preface tip here for listeners that are considering this, just make sure you check your local laws and regulations. And I always do a courtesy call to the local sheriff's department and fire department. I actually drove right by the fire department and they were all out there washing their trucks that day. And I just stopped and said hello and told them what I was going to be doing. They said, yeah, no issues. And the reason you want to do that is obviously your neighbors, they see a bunch of smoke and, more than likely, they're going to call it in. We've had it happen to us before when we've done it, and if the fire department's already tracking it, then they know it might not, be emergency. They'll if they get called, they're still going to show up, but they'll see it to you and just be like, okay, have a great one. Do you need anything? The other thing on that is notify your neighbors if you have their contact information. I always send out a courtesy text to our neighbors on all sides saying, hey, if you see smoke, it's just us. We're doing some controlled burns. They're always very appreciative of that. You know what I mean? For obvious reasons, especially if you're doing any sort of burning of any significant caliber. Like we ended up burning several acres. I don't know the exact amount, but I burned three sections on our 437 acre farm. So, I mean, I would guarantee, I would guess I burned anywhere from, I'd say I probably burned 15 to 20 acres. So it's not huge, but it was a decent amount, just for it was by myself for the first section, and then one of my good time or one of my really good old time friends, childhood friends, came and joined me for the other two. And that actually is a good segue into. Did I lose you there, Carter? Are you still there?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. All right. I lost your video. I just want to make sure. So that actually is a good segue into one of the benefits of prescribed fire, and the reason. One of my buddies, not only is he wanted to come help me just to help out a friend because Perry and one of the other guys that we initially thought might be able to help us wasn't able to make it, is he is also a farmer of a pretty large scale. And he's been wanting to dive into prescribed fires for the added benefits to his cattle, hog, and chicken farm operation. They have a lot of pasture land that could use some controlled fire to help mitigate some of that non-usable forage for cattle and such. So there's a lot of other benefits that you might not be the first thing in your mind. And one of the things I told him is there's been a big problem with some of those Lone Star ticks in our part of the world lately. And I forget what the disease is. He's told me, and my stepfather, who is a cattle farmer, has mentioned it as well. I don't want to try and put out misinformation here, so I'll just leave the disease out. But essentially, there's a disease that tick carries, and it is absolutely decimating cattle herds in places. He said he's lost, 10 cows in 3 years, which might not sound like a lot, but that's a lot when you're making your living off of these animals at, anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 a pop. That's a substantial amount of loss from a damn tick. So these controlled fires can help with that. Obviously ticks live in things that are going to burn. They're just going to be burning. And so you're not going to eliminate them, but you can mitigate them. The big focus for us is kind of a multifaceted idea. So not only obviously do we try and be good caretakers of our farm, but also we want to reap the benefits. And we've discussed on other podcasts ways to improve the wildlife for a lot of different reasons, from an environmental reason and from a hunter's perspective. There's both ends of that spectrum, and they're mutually beneficial there. And we try and take advantage of those the best we can. And it's challenging for you listeners that might have some places that aren't close by. We can relate to that. So Perry and I, we typically after deer season go through and kind of prioritize the laundry list of chores we want to get done prior to turkey season and prior to deer season. And that helps us keep on track. Might be a good tip for some of you other guys. It's not really focused on controlled burns there, but that's kind of where we started, because you only have a small window to do controlled burns, right? Like, you're not going to be doing very efficient controlled burns in the middle of the rainy season in spring when everything's crazy green and wet. You're going to be spending thousands of dollars on diesel fuel to try to get something very small to burn. It's not lucrative, right? So there's a time window you have too. And typically that time window is before turkey season. Like, if you're done burning before turkey season and after deer season, you're probably pretty good. And one of the reasons I like to do it before turkey season too is you're not, like, you can burn during the winter as long as you don't have burn bans in your state, in your area. And it's fine because everything's going to be dead. But then you have a burnt patch that is going to be there for a while. So if you do have livestock on it, you might actually eliminate some of that browse. You might not want to do that. And it's not going to rejuvenate as quickly as if you would do it, a few weeks before the spring. Not to mention, if you use your land, you're walking through burn up area. You know what I mean? You get that black soot all over you. It's not a big deal, but I like to time it right before spring, and I know Perry does too, just because you burn it, and then, dude, it's amazing. Like, it looks like a lush green oasis after, once that spring green up happens in those burn areas. So that's also a good segue into one of the other benefits. And so for turkeys like a diverse habitat, but they also... Turkeys can thrive in a lot of different habitats, like, just kind of like whitetail. You have turkeys anywhere from Nebraska to Florida to the mountains of, where we're at, Appalachian Mountains, Carter, all the way out to the Rockies. Different species, but it's essentially the same animal. But what common theme there is you're not going to find birds in places that, like, deer can move in thick, really thick, like, cutover. Turkeys are not going to do that because their eyesight is their number one. I'm just blanking on the word. Sensory receptor. Is that sound right? No, their eyesight's their number one, defense mechanism, I guess, is, and if they're in thick stuff, they can hear pretty well, but they can't see. So they're not going to be hanging out. They might move through thick stuff, but they love open hardwoods. A cutover is good for turkeys if you're doing controlled burns, if you're keeping a lot of that stuff that they can't, because then they feel protected because they have cover, but you can also see. If you've ever been in a 2, 3, 4 even 5 year cutover that's had some burns in it. If you watch the hunting public guys, they hunt in them all the time, and you can, it's very huntable. You can walk through it, but there's also cover. You know, an animal can disappear quickly, could show up quickly, but you can see out to 100 yards. You're not going to see 500 yards, but a lot of those types of habitats are what you're looking to create there. So that's kind of one of the perks from strictly turkeys. You know, if you have a really thick grown up place on your land that, you know, you couldn't even walk through, you might see deer move through, because deer, it's bizarre to see some of the places that deer will hang out in the thickest, nastiest, thorniest, you know. And that's always where they want to go. That's always where they want to go die too. When you shoot one, you have to drag it out of there. But turkey, you're not gonna find turkeys just hanging out in those areas. They don't bed in those areas just because it's a different species there. So plus in those open hardwoods, when you burn, you're basically igniting Mother Nature to rejuvenate. There's a lot of species that actually, and Perry can, I wish Perry was here because he can elaborate on this specific topic a lot more like scientific information. There's a lot of species that almost need fire to germinate. Maybe not need it, but it speeds up that cycle, or it improves that cycle, or it increases a percentage of germination. A lot of hardwoods thrive when you do a consistent prescribed fire on like a 3-year rotation. Yeah. That's what we're trying to do. You know, we've been very intentional with picking the sections of our farm, and that's something I would really like to spend the, I know we're, you know, this is a shorter episode, but the last kind of part of this talking about is be very deliberate in your planning for this. I was telling my buddy Aaron, who came and helped me because he wanted to learn, I said, where people mess up, or where people go wrong with prescribed fire, is they don't have a plan. They go out there and like, hey, I want to burn this section. I'm going to light it on fire, and then I'm going to go put it out. That's not how you need to do this. Or it can get really hairy really quick if you don't have a plan. So Perry kind of touched on it before, is the first thing you need to do is locate the area you want to burn. Figure out why. Figure out if it's going to burn. Is it suitable to burn? Is there fuel there? If it's a hayfield that was mowed, a late season mowing right before deer season, and it's only, you know, 3 inches tall and it's been grazed by cattle all winter, you're probably not going to get it to burn. If it's open hardwoods that has some decent understory and a bunch of leaves, it's probably going to be an optimal place to burn. So the second thing you need to do is identify your boundaries of the section you want to burn. That's imperative for a few reasons. One, if it's on a property line, you need to make sure you establish some really good fire control measures on those property lines. Two, even if it's not a property line, you want to make sure you establish some really good fire control measures on that boundary, right? And the other thing is, like I said, if you have 35 acres, you don't want to burn all 35 acres at once. You want to section it up and create diversity. And I mentioned earlier, a 3-year rotation is pretty good. Is pretty solid. So the areas you do want to burn, come up with a rotation. If you have 3 areas, let's just say on a 300 acre farm, and each one of them is 100 acres, don't burn all 300 acres at once. A good rule is 10%. You probably don't even want to burn 100 acres at once. But section up, quarter up some of those sections and spread them out through your property. And that's where you're going to get your biggest benefit. And then the next year, rotate that section, if that makes sense. So go to the neighboring one, and then the neighboring one, and then the neighboring, and then in 3 years you come back to it. 3 to 5 years, you know, that's depending on what climate you're in, what part of the world you're in, that's gonna determine that as well. You know, if you're in Colorado, you're probably not going to be doing a 3-year rotation. You might be doing a 5-year, 10-year rotation. But here in the Appalachian Mountains, we can get away with the 3-year rotation. The other one is going into those fire protective measures. Really make sure you have fire control established. I cannot stress that enough. I don't want to throw Perry under the bus, and he's mentioned it too, but he had a controlled burn almost get away from him because he was kind of in a hurry and didn't put in his fire break because he thought he was going to be able to snuff it out. And what ended up happening was an old dead pine tree caught fire, and the root system caught fire underground and kept popping up in different places and spreading fire from underground, which is insane. It's crazy, but it can happen quick. The next thing I want to touch on before we jump off here, Carter, is check the weather. Do not try and force it to happen. You're going to waste a lot of time. You're going to waste a lot of fuel, or it's going to be a safety hazard. For example, if it has been extremely dry for 2 weeks and there's high winds, do not do a burn. Even if that's the only time you have to do it, it can wait until next year. It is better than creating a wildfire. Do not rush these sort of things. Do not do it unprepared. Do not do it with one person if it's the first time you've ever done it. You know what I mean? Like, do your research, be thorough, have a team out there, recruit some buddies, recruit some people that want to learn it too or like doing it. It's a lot of fun to do it. It's kind of like gun safety. You can't just pick up a firearm and start going to the range and blasting them full auto. You know what I mean? You need to have some training. You need to have some education, be responsible, teach yourself if you don't know it. I'm sure there's courses online. There's courses online for everything. But there's a lot of common sense factors. And so like when we go out there and prep these control burns, we're bringing shovels. We have fire rakes. We have fire swatters. Fire swatter, imagine a mud flap on a stick. You literally, it just snuffs out the fire. You just hold that over the sections, drag it along, kind of swat it. And there's YouTube tutorials on how to use all these tools that Forest Service people use all the time. And the other one is, you know, have a good crew. Brief your crew on what each person's role is going to be. And, you know, have a thought out plan there. And then you'll be a lot more successful in that. And then the last thing I want to touch on here is the best method I've learned to do this is go slow and don't bite off more than you can chew. I mentioned that I did one of the three sections by myself before my buddy got there. I was literally lighting 10 to 20 foot sections at a time, letting it backburn 6 feet or so. And what backburn means is I have a fire break installed in place, but I'm lighting that section and then I'm letting it burn for 5 to 6 feet, creating another fire break. I'm using the fire to create a backburn. And backburning is burning into the wind, not with the wind. So obviously if the fire is burning with the wind, it's going to be going a lot faster. You can also backburn downhill because fire wants to go uphill. So if it's a clear day or a still day, which is, you know, depending on the circumstance, depending on the weather, sometimes you can use wind to your favor to get a hotter fire, more efficient fire. But like I would start at the top of a hill on a steep section and let it burn down the hill for a good ways. And then that would light the bottom and let that meet up to the already pre-burnt area. And it puts itself out. You don't have to do anything at that point. So then what I would do is I would start with the corners. So if you do have a square-ish, obviously everything's not going to be a perfect square. Start with one corner and make an L or a right angle around that square. 20 feet one way, 20 feet the other direction, you know, at a 90 degree angle, let that start to burn in. Then what I would do is in small increments, depending on how long, connect that corner to another corner that is going to be your back burn. So if it's at the top of the hill, you want to do your top two corners and start letting those burn in. Then once those burn in about on one steep track, I let it burn in a good 25, 30 feet, man, before I went and lit the other corners. And it took a while. But again, this isn't the kind of thing you can rush. I let it burn in and then I connected that dots down the box to the bottom corners. Let those bottom corners come in a little bit. And they went fast, real fast, because it's at the bottom of a hill. And then I connected that bottom line. So the bottom of that square, the downhill side. And then there's actually a really good picture. I sent it to the group chat, Carter. It looked like a big circle burning.
Yeah.
And all that is it's just a big circle of fire burning in, and then it puts itself out.
Yeah.
So I know we went a little bit over 15 minutes, but this is the kind of topic you could talk about for 2 hours and not cover everything.
Yeah, man. It's super important too. Like,
yeah.
Enhancing your soil health, promoting biodiversity, and protecting and encouraging your wildlife population.
Absolutely.
Like,
I mean,
massively underutilized probably
skill. I don't know of a downside to do it. I don't know of one.
It's intimidating. That's the only downside.
Yeah, I guess that's the downside, is it's laborious. It takes some planning. It takes some methodology. It's not like just frost seeding a clover plot. Any nutsack can go out there and frost seed a clover plot. And anyone can honestly do a controlled fire. It just takes some due diligence on your part for some prep work, for some planning, for some very intentional, deliberate planning too. Not just, hey, let's try it out. Like be intentional, because there's a lot of big risk factors. Look at Texas right now. I mean, how much of that state is on fire?
And
So I
not
mean,
forcing it like you're talking about. Just
yeah.
because you got the Saturday afternoon off, that doesn't mean it's time to burn, at
Yeah,
all.
and last year Perry and I didn't burn because the opportunities we had, it wasn't good weather. It wasn't the conditions weren't right. We weren't going to force it, man. It was
The
either
right
too
call.
wet or it was too dry. It was it, we never had good weather. That's the downside of living 3.5 hours away from the property you're trying to manage, but it's part of it, man. And it's better to take a year off and do it next year and have a more thought out plan than it is to burn down your neighbor's farm.
It is, dude. And that patience is important, and it translates to hunting too. Not just hunting a bad wind because it's your only day to hunt, or I can only hunt this morning or this afternoon. I know I got a bad wind, but whatever. That may be
Absolutely.
that big buck or whatever, So if
Absolutely,
management
man.
is the goal, you got to look at it from the holistic point of view year round. So I love that. That's fantastic. I have nothing to add, man. I'm stoked you guys did that, and I'm excited to learn how to do that with you guys and
Yeah,
see
for
the
sure.
results. Maybe we can post some pictures.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I was hoping Luke or you could use a lot of those pictures I sent. There's some pretty good ones. If anyone's curious in it, they can look at it. And also as a teaser, I know we're planning another full podcast on some land management stuff, and we'll probably dive more into the weeds on some of the controlled burn benefits. So if you listeners are interested in this, just stay tuned on the Hunt Lift Deep podcast here. And this isn't going to be the last conversation we have about prescribed fire, because like I say, we could talk about it for hours and not touch all the things that I really want to get into. But yeah, that kind of concludes my tips. It wasn't necessarily like one tip, but hopefully there was some valuable information in there for someone who's considering this as far part of their land management program.
Absolutely. They should definitely consider it. And on the next one, we'll get the professional environmentalist on as well.
Don't make his ego any bigger,
That's right. That's right. Just,
No,
yeah.
I'm just kidding. He knows his shit about it, even though he almost burnt down our farm. He knows the technical aspect.
Right. That's right. Hell yeah, dude. Well, I appreciate it, Evan. Looking forward to chatting again soon, man.
Absolutely, dude. It's good seeing you.
Yeah, you too, man. Listeners, as always, we appreciate the hell out of you guys. We'll talk to you next week.